So how many years ago was it that you found this path that you're on now?
10.
Okay, so 10 years.
10 years
ago. Would you say that you're more or less what you hoped you would be 10 years ago?
Honestly, Jason, the honest answer is I didn't have any hope or vision of what I wanted to be. I never, ever do. I am like, you know, they say that with meth people, people who, meth addicts, one of the most damaging aspects of it is it reduces your thinking to just the day. So it's just, you're just thinking in a 12-hour period and that's it. You don't have no conception of next month or next year. That's how I am.
Without the meth.
Without the meth. All the time. So I just think today's quite good and tomorrow I think will be all right. And that's it. And if I start to think about the future, I go off track. And I think I've not got enough of this, or I've got too much of this, or this is wrong, or this is right. So I just have a natural ability not to dwell in that.
I'm going to say something now. It might come out wrong, so try not to take it the wrong way. But a lot of the things that you're saying to Henrik on Red Ice about race, about spiritual evolution, things like that, some of which are borderline. I mean, you're aware that you're going to offend people as Henrik does, because they will interpret them or misinterpret them as, you know, having elitist, etc., etc. Anyway, those ideas, a lot of those ideas, I was completely down with 20 years ago. And they were very much part of how I saw the world. But this path that I've been on has been like a brutal stripping away of everything, not everything, because it's still happening, but of a large percentage of the beliefs I had that weren't sourced in, you know, what's a hammer do when it hits a nail, in really direct experience, as opposed to visions, dreams, which I still pay attention to, needless to say, psychedelics, books I'd read, you know, systems of belief that I internalized and that did become real. They do become experiential, but are they really, you know, are they? Is it second matrix? I mean, this is, to bring this, if we can, take the focus off you or me, but to the larger community. A few years ago, I was talking a lot about second matrix. The term didn't get picked up. I'm surprised and slightly disappointed, because now, 6 years later, I feel that the second matrix has been built, and it's just, I don't really want to have anything to do with the alternate perceptions community now, because I think it's all, and this is also more, the more I've researched, like Theosophy, I'd say, was a psyop, quote unquote, oversimplifying, you know, for brevity's sake. The esoteric knowledge that we have picked up, that's filtered down to us, that we've incorporated into our lives, and we've, you know, reformulated, and it, what's the source? It's really very dodgy, I think. Like, we've been fed a whole bunch
hard,
of...
It's hard to disagree with any of what you've just said. I think one thing that I've noted in communicating with you is a lot of your work is quite self focused. Your self-possessed method, which is to some degree use self as the instrument for, you know, your own transformation and track that, smart, intelligent people, intermediate and advanced students will get that and follow it. Newcomers won't, Jason. I speak to newcomers as well, and I don't think you want to. And that's the red ice factor. That red ice is always full of newcomers. And then as soon as they move to the intermediate and advanced levels, I think they move on. Now, I know that. And so I go to red ice in the same manner that one would go and visit a school that one used to go to and say, well, I don't do this anymore, but I know that a lot of new students come here who want to have a good experience. And I can just think, oh, fuck you guys, this is stupid, this is 20, 30 year old stuff. It is. It actually is. I agree. But there's an element in that where I think, well, there's always newcomers, and it's really easy just to forget that, because perhaps, like you, I shouldn't keep presupposing what anything you think, but we enjoy speaking to the intermediate and advanced people who are already where there's a whole thing that you don't need to explain and we get each other. For me, I've experimented over the years with speaking to newcomers. And that means audiences that sometimes I'm thinking this is crazy, but it's a good exercise in trying to be real and not having to do massive explanations and yet being respectful. So for me, it's a good exercise doing something like that, because it's not my natural enjoyable subject matters. Mine are naturally hard to explain and presuppose a giant piece of study has already taken place in the individual. That's when I most enjoy it, frankly. So doing Red Ice is a good exercise for me. And to be honest, doing it recently, I'm so tired of hearing about equality and discrimination and race that I was keen to get on there and just think, okay, fucking hell, I am so sick of this shit in the news at the moment. I am going to enjoy and indulge myself for a moment in let's just be careful of our terms here. So that was a thought with Red Ice. But more significantly, let me just address what you were saying, if I may. The main trend that I've noticed in the alternative landscape, the alternative perceptions community, as you call it, is a striking lowering of quality, a real drop-off in the caliber of speakers and insight and research and whatnot. And there's just so much rubbish to wade through now. It's just genuinely difficult to locate the good stuff. I mean, you could say it's a bit like music. You know, you need to kind of follow and track certain musicians and studios and genres and tours or whatever to keep track of where the, you know, the real juju is. You can't just switch on the music channel and expect to hear something good. That doesn't happen. You have to sort of seek it out. But, you know, alternative views of the world in terms of philosophy and metaphysics and shamanism and whatnot, now, in the, let's call it the mainstream underground, which is perhaps what you're calling the second matrix, is rubbish. And 10 years ago, it wasn't very rubbish.
10 years ago, I was so excited. I just read the blog post about our first conversation, and it's talking about how the new counterculture is forming, and it's wonderful. And I really believed that whole thing.
I know. So I feel that people who put themselves forward in those days, and let's be immodest for a moment, like you and I and others, felt that they actually had some skill and expertise in what they did, and spirit and creativity and attitude. But we knew that we had something worthwhile to say. And when I started speaking seriously in these circles around that time, most of my peers were good. I didn't necessarily agree with them all, just like you and I don't agree, but I think we can respect each other's craft. Mm. And they were decent, right? Men and women who thought deeply, were talented communicators and had reason and wisdom. Now, I think that's very rare, very rare. And I think there's maybe 10 people out of hundreds who are any good at all. And most people out there, I was just joking about this yesterday, are just saying shit. Mm-hmm. And it's sensationalist, it's irresponsible often, and sometimes just plainly untrue. It can be entertaining, but it is rubbish. And so a lot of what I would just consider as casual observations are being presented as sort of erudite analysis. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's their choice to do that. People are free to do that, whatever. But as I said to you before, Jason, if a young man were to come to me and say, hey, Kramer, where can I go to hear consistently high-quality conversations with wise people? I'd struggle to point them to a dozen quality resources with consistent output. I think that's hard. So I think one of the methods of mainstreaming the underground has been to diffuse it and diversify it to the extent where the fragmentation is so vast now, and anybody with a microphone and a few notes scribbled down puts themselves forward as a commentator, it's difficult to digest it anymore. And the people who are in those realms are not scholarly. So we might have not liked or not resonated with some of the people 10 years ago, but most people were pretty good. like 9 out of 10 people on those shows, whatever show it is, were pretty good, and now it's fucking 1 out of 10 if you're lucky.
I was just wondering if it was us that had changed or it, but I think it's both.
I think we have changed, and like I say, I would offer as a thought to you the idea that as we mature and progress, our audience gets smaller because we speak into advanced students, and I have no qualms in putting myself forward in that way. Only in terms of the amount of time, not advancement in some great, vast celestial illumination, just in the amount of work and effort and stuff. You know, we know the basics, we know some of the intermediate, and we know a few advanced things as well. That's where our focus is. The mainstream underground is completely focused on the other end, newcomers, newcomers, newcomers.
Yeah, well, something that happened with Ufology, which I think is relevant here, I mean, in a general sense, it's totally relevant in that Ufology was a research field and then it became basically a form of entertainment or a wing of pop culture. And I think that this is happening with conspiracy theory, and it basically happens with everything. It gets incorporated into the cultural Borg. Damn, that was going to a point and I just lost it. Fill the space.
We'll talk about Red Ice for a minute because I think we'd mention that. Should we do that now?
Well, I'm still at that point.
You want to finish that
point? There's a missing piece. You know how this happens. Like, it sort of comes to form in one's consciousness, and then the opportunity comes to speak. And then, so there's a missing piece, but the ufology thing, I was saying, it's all becoming commodified.
Yeah.
Then,
like Bigfoot was a dead interesting thing a while back, and now it's like a joke subculture.
Yeah. So, but I can't. I don't know if I can connect it to the other thing I wanted to say.
Talk about something else, and we'll come back to it.
Well, no, I'm going to press on with, because you brought it up a couple of times. This thing about advanced students and
good.
Because that doesn't fit with my experience. I mean, my experience is yes. My audience does seem to get smaller rather than bigger the closer I get to expressing what I really want to express.
Yeah, good.
So there is that, but the idea that this is because I've got this filter and only those who are really progressing on the spiritual path are passing through the filter doesn't seem to hold up, because...
No, I'm not quite saying that.
Well, what? If I can finish...
Please do, yeah.
My sense is kind of the opposite of that, in that those who have spent more time on esoteric digging and putting together information and trying to turn it into some sort of worldview, they're actually there's more to take apart to get to the truth with those people, because they've been digging away in the second matrix, going deeper and deeper into the second matrix, thinking this is it, you know, this is reality, and in actual fact no, it's not.
It depends who it is though, doesn't it? I know people who sit on the computer and do that, and it's not good, and it is just, you know, pulling mirror pieces apart and reflections, and you're not sure what you're looking at, and you've got this enormous jigsaw puzzle on the floor, and it's not really getting anyone anywhere because some of those pieces are false and you can't tell one from another. But there's another kind of method where you're not doing that because there's no media involved, and in my history, in my growth, and with the people that I've worked with, that's a way of making sure that the progress is more on target, which is you close your computer. So you're not doing any research, you're not looking at your computer, you're not doing anything in your browser, forget it. You get out and you do stuff in the flesh, and it's with people or not at all. That's been a huge change in my work, that my most rewarding growth personally and my most rewarding exchanges with, quote, clients... Mm. have been physical, not right. Electronic, not media, not representational. It's face-to-face.
Right, yeah, because that's been the sort of baseline.
That affects it, you know, in a positive way, because otherwise you can drift into being an endless researcher, which is is not life. It's not how to be.
Well, because if it's in that context, and I wouldn't make it a simple dichotomy as computer versus real life, but sort of a theoretical knowledge and exploration of the mind,
yeah.
or living in the mind, let's say. If that's your context, it can seem real, and it can seem like it's becoming more and more real, because, as I say, you're going deeper and deeper into the mind, you're creating these mental constructs, and they really look wonderful, these cathedrals of ideology and, you know, metaphysics and all the rest of it, and it's fun for a while, but when it does come to actually getting down into the nitty-gritty of real living, I mean, this was a big... inescapable realization for me around psychedelics, just how little they helped me just to live my life, right? And the same with 90% of this knowledge is that, knowledge in quotes, is that it's really fascinating, and you can certainly turn it into, you know, very eloquent descriptions of reality, but does it actually apply? Like this came up with Paul Levy recently, like talking about evil. Well, I don't encounter evil in my day-to-day life. There's no such thing as evil in my life.
Me neither.
So why are we talking about it? And this is true also of...
Well, it's a Paul Levy model, isn't it? And it's like some people like that and some people find it useful. For me, there's no good and evil in my world. It doesn't exist and never has done.
Right. But we all have our models, and I'm not saying I don't. Like, my model currently is embodiment, and that the psyche needs to land in the body. In the
Mine's
body.
Embodiment. You can't have a body. It's mine.
Hey, something to fight over. But I'm aware it's just a model, and it's got its limitations. And
but you're merging with it physically, though, aren't you? So you're applying the model in the renovation of and very... important space in your life,
right?
And in my model, mind, I often say mind model heart merges, right? So the mind models stuff, heart merges with things. Okay, you can't do that on a fucking screen or a page. So in my day, I can have a super conversation with an interesting man like you and enjoy it. I think that was good, people might enjoy that. But it's afterwards, when I go and walk out down the street and see the bloody bird on the branch, that's when being begins and merging begins. So unless my models are applicable through demonstration, I fucking drop them. So I agree with, in terms of knowledge, particularly abstract and esoteric knowledge, there's such a lot to do that you can just become a scholar, a processor of knowledge, and reciting and remembering and drawing old files out and presenting them in new ways. That has lost its thing for me a long time ago. I would say that I am pretty much 100%, pretty much 100%. I am pretty much results driven. So I do what works. So if Blavatsky comes out with some theosophical thing that works, I'll do it. I think this is good. And then if Gurdjieff says something, or Alan Watts, or fucking Conan Doyle, he was a real abstract thinker, and didn't know that till recent times, or Manly P. Hall, or fucking my hero, Fred Dibner, you know, the bloke who used to blow chimneys up.
No.
If somebody comes out with something that works, I'm doing it. And then I piece that lot together and say, here's some models that for me have been applied successfully, in that they have provided full expression of self, so the red end of the spectrum, you know, the animal, the green end, the romantic, and the blue end, the celestial thinker, and they work. And in that full expression, wisdom comes. You can't have wisdom without the red, the green, and the blue, let us say. You can't just fucking think about it. So I'm big into that embodiment, and enactment is a word actually I just wrote for this project I'm doing. So enactment is a favourite word of mine at the moment. I'm sure you're fucking stealing my emails or something. I feel that very strongly, you know, very genuinely in my life, and people will call me out on that who know me if I miss it. So I'm very on that. And I think that when you speak to somebody about these issues, they can tell and say, okay, well, here's another esotericist, right? But this guy, he's only sharing the stuff that works. He's not going to bamboozle us. He doesn't feel pleasure in mystifying us. He's just trying to say, hey, look at this. This clarifies. This dissolves that falsehood. and this supports this beautiful truth, I think. Anyway, it's all just what one man thinks. See what yourself. See what you think for yourself. So you can always preface it with that. There's no grandiosity in what I do, and where that's seen, I would say it's a misinterpretation, because I'm pretty fucking close on that. What I do like, though, and this is perhaps what sometimes you might hear and feel unpalatable, is to inspire people to have confidence in themselves, which I don't think many people do, to think, you know, get out there, make changes, fucking do stuff. The key for me was that the job I wanted didn't exist, so I had to create it. So I said to Henrik, there's this phrase, vium in venium aut facium, find a way or make one. And I had to make one, and that was my mistake, that for a long time I was trying to find the path, trying to find a way, trying to find an expression. It didn't fucking exist. There wasn't a path. I had to make it. I had to just get my machete out and cut one, you know? And again, that's an example of what a 19-year-old young man would say. Any tips, I'd say, yeah, find a way or make one, right? Don't just go from the menu. Make one. Don't be afraid to create a vocation, a job, an expression that doesn't exist. And that is bloody priceless. And I'll tell you what, Jason, it's been a long path for me to realize that. And I'm sure it could have been a lot easier. I'm happy that you've found a pleasure in renovating your house. I spoke to a man the other day, and he was renovating a house in China or something, I can't remember. He was an American guy who was over there, and he said it was the happiest time of his life, and he's like 40 or whatever. The happiest time of his life was 18 months slowly renovating a house. He said, I can't remember a time when I was ever... And he was very active and intellectual, and... Yeah, you remind me of him saying that.
Yeah, well, that would be part of it then, because for somebody who, like your family background, was working in steel and all the rest of it, and that was just part of the climate that they were used to, then renovating a house wouldn't necessarily be refreshing.
That's true, yes.
And actually, if you were a fly on the wall or a bird on the wire watching me renovate the house, you might... think that I wasn't really enjoying it.
I know.
I get quite Basil Fawlty a lot of the time.
Yeah, you conjure a good image there, and I can feel it.
It's very cathartic, let's put it that way.
So have you gotten skillful with the tools and whatnot? Have you noticed you've become more capable?
I have, and this is interesting kind of in the context of what we're talking about as well, is that, actually there's various threads I can see coming together now. If I had seen where I am now 20 years ago, I would have been horribly disappointed, because 20 years ago I had all of this esoteric knowledge and all of this philosophy and beliefs about things, and including myself, you know, that I was the one, and I thought that it was all going to crystallize and come together on my spiritual path, which I now see as my will to power, and they're not the same thing. And actually, my path has been the very opposite of what I thought it would be. It's been a path, as I said in my first email to you recently, the path of disillusionment. So for me, the spiritual path is very much a path of disillusionment, disappointment, defeat, ignominy, and I love it. I love it. I can say that with all honesty, because right now I'm not feeling those things, but that is what has characterized it. And yet, and so...
So you have been getting rid of misconceptions, if we were to...
Well, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, which is
fantastic. There's things I didn't need, but there does seem to be no end to them, and there doesn't seem to be... it doesn't seem like anything's going to survive. It's like everything must go. And so in the context of that, I've been learning to renovate. And yes, I struggle and I fight and I curse the gods every day, all day, every day, including Aeolus, because it's really fucking windy around here. But I'm discovering what feels like a superpower. Like, I know how to plumb now. I know how to put floors in. I
Yeah, I
know
tell
how to
you, in the
drywall.
end times, that'll be bloody invaluable.
Yeah,
If we
right.
really do see physical end times, I'll be knocking on your door when my toilet's broke.
Exactly. So
So
I can even, yeah.
you can fix my toilet, and I'll hunt you a deer. How about that?
Can you do that?
I can do that.
I'm very impressed. That's the most impressive thing I've heard about Neil Kramer. That changes everything,
Oh,
actually.
you see, what we learn about each other without these preconceived ideas. Yeah, well,
So yeah, just to finish that point,
yes, please
it's
do.
not, I mean, there's no status in being a plumber. I don't need to tell you that from this general background. There's no status in being good with your
No,
hands.
sure.
The intellect is what's admired in our culture. So this feeling of having developed these superpowers, and used ironically, of course, is entirely mine. It's not like I can go out and socialize and talk about. Well, we are talking about renovations now, so to some extent, I can turn, we can, the mind can turn anything into a currency, but essentially, it doesn't increase my status, and it's not something I can kind of bring to the social realm unless somebody says, "Hey, I've got a leak. Do you mind fixing it?" Which isn't going to raise my status in their eyes, really. They just think I'm more useful.
It just seems to me rather a logical extension to sweater, all of this leaks and fixes and
Totally, totally. It's the
all that.
metaphorical
It
value,
is. You've just physically,
yeah,
moved it along the spectrum, haven't you?
enactment. Yeah, it's enactment,
Enactment, yes, indeed.
it's I want to say embedding in the body, but it's more like it's actually something that is in the body that's actually becoming conscious now. It's instinct, and then what is instinct? Instinct is like this internal GPS system in the body, which is the connection to the soul. Like the soul is what guides the body, or the psyche, as I tend to prefer to call it, but people keep thinking the psyche means the mind, which to me is just
Yeah.
like digestion, is just a side effect of biology.
Well, that's
Where
like me saying, well, we run the risk of that, but if they pay attention, we can get round to explaining it, don't we?
we do, yeah, we have to be very clear about our terms, and there's something I've had to learn over the recent years is just how much communication is about what's heard and received rather than what I think I'm
No kidding.
transmitting,
No kidding.
and how much gets lost in that translation. I'm the opposite of a pep talk or whatever that is. I could say I'm a soothsayer and that would sound nice, but I'm anyway.
When people are too big for the britches, I should send them to you.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's because, you know, we should teach what we know, and that's what I know. I know what ego inflation is like. I know that
You dissolve things, don't you? You dissolve things and I build things.
Could be.
So there is a synergy, and that those are both genuine roles, and you do it rather well, and I do mine rather well. So we have to say again that those two roles are legitimate within a system of expression. So you're dealing with a particular part of the spectrum, I would say, and so am I. And they are opposing in some way. So if we glance at each other's work and life, there might seem to be, you know, rather stark differences. But actually, if you follow it round, it is a nice circle and say, ha, you do need both these things. You need to destroy stuff, go to Jason. You need to build stuff, go to Neil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, because I, as you probably know and or could guess, I didn't have any problem making my own way or forging my own path through the machete. Yeah. I mean, I was given a very nice machete, like with a huge inheritance. And so there was never any question that I was going to make my own way life. And so because of that, and to be contrarian again, it's not by choice, I can't help it. I'm now in the position of looking back at the way that I made and saying, God, what a bloody awful mess I made of that jungle. You know, look, if I'd just been more patient, I could have seen there was a way through there, and I could have gone around there, and I would have even come across some nice fruit spring.
Instead, I hacked the whole jungle
apart with my machete.
But that's the joy, isn't it? Because now you can say, it took me 20 years, but I can say, ha, there was a path that I could have gone along.
Yeah.
So, you know, find a way or make one. You can do both. So I found paths that were good, like, be a poet, be a guitarist, work in an office, be a lover, be a warrior, be a joker, be a scholar. Mm. And no, not any of those were really quite for me. They didn't really work, and there were people better than me and people worse than me, but that didn't factor into it hugely. It just wasn't for me. And in the end, it was like, well, your way of doing things doesn't have, there's not a drop down menu with it on that item. It's not in the menu.
Right.
You're going to have to create aspects of it. There are paths that are good. It's been useful knowing about Zen and Buddhism. And hermeticism in mystical philosophy has been very central to what I feel and practice. They have been worthwhile paths that I was happy to walk along and just look and be, very open on that path to being a newcomer, you know, like beginner's mind style in Zen, Shoshin, they call it, don't they? Just being open as if you say, look, I'm a beginner. I don't know anything. If I were to go to a Spanish class, I don't know how to speak Spanish. I'll just sit there, shut the fuck up and listen to the people who do know how to speak Spanish. And in Zen, they call it Shoshin. And Shunryu Suzuki used to say, in the expert's mind, there are few possibilities. In the beginner's mind, there are many.
Hmm.
And you can extend that beginner's mind forward. And so in learning about hermeticism in particular, it's enabled me to pin down the esotericists who were getting results and the ones who were just saying stuff. And it's no different in the 19th century than it is today with all our media spheres and stuff. It's the same game, and most of them were rubbish. It's just there's a tide, you know, there's an ebb and a flow of quality. 10 years ago it was nice and easy, because the forums for decent speakers and thinkers were quite well curated, because people didn't put themselves forward unless they knew what they were talking about. That happened also in the 1850s and the 1950s and the 1750s, same thing. And so I don't see it as anything extraordinarily new. It's just that the quickness of it, because of the internet, It's 10 years. That would have taken 100 years. We've just seen it all happen in 10 years.
Right.
In one decade.
Well, I think, if I was hearing you right, that this relates to liminality, and I was going to mention it a few minutes ago when you were talking, because that's how I've ended up identifying myself, as in I can't identify myself, so as a liminalist, and I'm constantly unaware exactly of what I am and what I'm doing and what I'm offering, and that's it, you know, take it or leave it, as you say. But in the larger context...
It's a good word, Jason. Again, I have used that word in the past. I am sure that you have some sort of line into my fucking desktop here.
I think liminal is a word whose time is coming, actually. So, liminality, one of the side effects of a period of liminality, which I think we could probably agree we're in now, been in for some time, is these false ceremony masters. That people with charisma, or at least the balls to, you know, act as if they had charisma, will step up into the roles of teachers and guides, even though they've got no credentials whatsoever. And I think this, obviously, this is the political realm, it has been for millennium, but now, you know, with the technology, liminality is becoming more and more prevalent. The information, you know, overload, right? We don't know what's real, what's true. Increasing liminality means more and more of these figures, these false ceremony masters, who, in a good sense, you could say they're tricksters. You know, that they can serve a function.
Yeah, if
because,
you want to be optimistic,
right, or if you want to be, I don't know what another word besides optimistic, but as in just take responsibility and say, well, you know, it's an ability to learn discrimination, as you put it. In a good sense, but I would say that this is quite a good lens to look at what we were talking about earlier with the alternate perceptions community, like what's going on there.
It does annoy me that, I'll tell you, you know, that's an interesting weakness to probe and be aware of. It bothers me that people get hoodwinked by these charismatic poor teachers. It bothers me more than perhaps it should do.
And I
don't know why that is. And I know that when you discovered more information about John DeReuter, that you were very upset about it. And at first, one might think, well, why is he worried about that? Just forget it, move on. You've learned a lesson, move on. But I know what it's like to have the confidence of an eager, open student to say, can you help me with this? And I'll go, well, yeah, sure, I can try. And we have a relationship. And it is kind of fucking special. It is a bit sacred, really. And when I see somebody doing that consciously as a diminishing exercise where there is trickery, it really riles me, you know? And it's one of the few things, in fact, that bothers me. So I don't like to see that. And I have to, you know, consciously and frequently say to people, you must self-determine, you must have faith in your own authority. If you like giving your authority away, you're in a masochistic cycle, which is legitimate but temporary. Don't dwell there, right? You have to learn that the only arbiter of reality is you through yourself, through your own will. And again, perhaps you see there's a different meaning of that, through a divine emanation, which you have to earn the ability to conduct and to shape. You don't get it for nothing. You have to earn it.
And you're aware of the conundrum in what you've just said.
Well, you highlight that for me.
If you're telling people that they should not listen to leaders and what other people say and just find their own way, then if to follow that advice, they would have to ignore that advice.
Yes, of course. Yes, that is funny. Well, here's the way I think about that, because it is funny that, you know, I often use the example of a piano teacher, right? You'll like this, Jason. Not a lot, as Paul Daniels said, but you might like it a little bit. Yeah. Let's say you're learning piano, and you have a piano teacher comes and sits by you on that stool and says, no, not like this, like this. Got it. And they teach you, and they come around on a Thursday afternoon for an hour or so. You don't want the fucking teacher sat there all the time, do you? There are times where you want to practice on your own and then go back over a period and say, hey, you know that thing you asked me? Look at this now. Excellent. Well done. And you seek guidance and wisdom from this piano teacher for a period of time. And then at the end of it, as all good teachers know, and many of us are teachers in life all the time, A great successful student is one that has then finished their work with you and off they go, and you don't see them ever again. And it's the great sadness of the primary school and the elementary school teacher that, apparently. There's a lovely French film about that, actually. And off they go. And that's it, and that's the end of it. So in the short term, you can't have the teacher with you all the time. So if you're doing your performance at the Royal Albert Hall, you don't want the piano teacher sat next to you, do you? You're going to look like a right dick.
Right.
You want to do it on your own, and you want to get it right. So as the student becomes capable, they don't need the teacher much. So it's like, if I see a dependency arising, I'll seek to quash it, to the detriment of my own, quote, business, and say, you don't need to talk to me anymore, we're done. Or, I think we'll ramp this down and maybe look at, you know, you can look at a different way of doing it. That happens. So I can't take anybody's money if I'm not feeling it's working. Just, I don't know, just like a doctor, say, you know what, you've been on this holistic medicine thing and you've still got, you know, an inflammatory bowel. I can't keep giving you this stuff. It's just not working. But hey, we give it a shot, didn't we? Thanks very much. See ya.
Right.
So for me, I'm conscious of the fact that with our piano teacher metaphor, people do want guidance for a period and then off they go. And the most pleasing people that I've worked with, I don't see them anymore because they've developed authority in their own perceptions. And then the other sort of person, which is perhaps my favourite of all really, is people who check in periodically, and it's really just an opportunity for us to track progress and growth and laugh about problems and cheer about triumphs or whatever. And again, it's very easy to underestimate how people don't have any opportunity for that. So they will instruct me to do that, to say, well, there's no one else. And it's like going to the dentist or buying some fucking shoes or getting the guy to come and cut your lawn. It's just one of those things, and I'm one of those things. So, yeah, it's time-limited, that. It's a period. What distresses me also is, and I use that word advisedly, is when I see someone and say, oh, you know, you're looking great shape. Why? Well, I've been doing yoga for a long time, and I get up at 5:30 every day and meditate, and I go and see the master. The master? What master? Oh, this guy, so-and-so. I've been under him now for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, that is a fucking disaster. I don't care who he is. I don't care what you're talking about. I don't care how good they are. That is a disaster. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's transference. I mean, it's transference
that
taken to a, obviously, you say a dangerous extreme, but I think it always happens. There's always an element of transference, and
there is for a limited time, though. And in Asian mysticism, it goes bad. That it has done, and people in the West see Asian just because it's exotic and different and get the knickers in a twist about it. In Western mysticism, particularly Western European, there's less of that. And in my hermetic experiences, there's an insistence on the student goes out for a year and does their own thing and then comes back, and you're on your own. And if you can't do it, tough shit. So it's like, you know, it's the SAS and they drop you off in a foreign territory and you've got to make your own way back. And if you don't, whatever, you're out. And if you do, well done. You showed some initiative, you made some decisions. Good. So the singular path in hermetic mystical philosophy is very, very much emphasized, and that just appeals to me.
Mm. Arrived here!
my side, a long, lonely ride through space and time, a long, lonely ride.
Well, speaking of the SAS, would you like to join?
What's that, the Secret Air Service?
I don't know, you said it.
Yes, the SAS is, you know, Britain's...
Who dares wins, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
right, yeah.
I mean, one of the things that's been happening on my path, to use that word, we're talking about various different aspects of it, knowledge, research, focus and all the rest of it, is that I've been focusing more and more on parapolitical and less on... what those guys call woo-woo, but, you know, the more esoteric stuff, right?
Yes.
And it kind of began around Whitley Strieber, just looking deeper and deeper into him and finding more and more evidence of shady connections, connections,
gosh,
and all the rest of it. Yeah, yeah.
I nearly went on his show the other day, but he's back and I've not heard from him since.
Very interesting, very timely. So, yeah, if you want more on that, let me know, because I can definitely give you the skinny on Whitley.
Yep.
So, the net result of this is that my idea about the second matrix has become much more experiential, and congruent with that, I've discovered things about my own family background, which is that, very briefly, that my rich socialist grandfather was actually a Fabian and even a founding Fabian, and was involved with various social engineering groups, right?
How fascinating.
So definitely, you know, the conspiracy law is actually my own personal history, and that was, needless to say, was pretty shocking and relates to sexual abuse and all kinds of, you know, really triggering areas. So, you know, now it's personal, as the Hollywood thing has it.
Yeah, I get that.
And therefore it's much more engaging. I'm much more engaged in it, and it's much more
I'm
real.
Also liable to make more mistakes if you're not careful.
True, yes. Well said. But yes, it's tangible now. And so what I wanted to bring up with you in these final moments, if they are, was about talking about the alternate perceptions community and the various different, you know, the obvious, the sort of dumbing down that just happens, it's just part of the capitalist machinery, the liminality and the false ceremony masters and all these more sort of general abstract interpretations, to throw into the mix the question of operatives who are actually paid and have a job to play the role of alternate perception spokespeople, right? They are
very
there,
interesting.
Right? We know that they exist.
Yeah, but I don't think it works how most people think it does.
Mm.
I think most co-opted and sequestered people are not aware that it's happened.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I think that it's not like the old days where, you know, there's a man sat in the Gene Hackman sat in the attic recording stuff, and there's a guy in a van over the road, and you get a paycheck in a brown envelope. It's all that happens now is the numbers shift.
Mm-hmm.
So the stats, the metrics shift. That's how you're paid. So I think that the funny dilemma is we don't know if we've been co-opted or not.
Right.
You don't know if you've been co-opted. I don't know.
Well, I'm relatively unsuccessful. So I'm compared to you, I'm pretty secure.
Oh, no. We're both niche players. And, you know, with a few wrong turns, I'll be under a bloody bridge. But, I mean,
how do you mean that last point?
Under a bridge. It's a euphemism for very poor. So you can't afford a house, so you live under a bridge with a brown paper bag with whiskey in it. You have told me that story from long ago. It seems very romantic now, but I'm sure it wasn't at the time.
Kind of.
Forgive me. But if this is how I perceive it works now. Let's say that there's an important political process going on with whatever, Hillary Clinton or Rand Paul or Marco Rubio or some, I don't know, whatever. And you want to turn attention away from that to another right-wing thing, you might focus it on race in the States, in Baltimore at the present time, for example,
mm-hmm.
or this cop who was just shot in New York. And anyone who's talking about that will suddenly see an enormous increase in their stats and their focus. And the technology is such that you can shift people from Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and this and that to a certain point. And there's a piece of technology, I forget the name of it now, it's annoying, which is like a device that clips onto the fiber optic cables that run under the ocean and intercepts the streams from the satellites, and they can move traffic from one place to another.
Right.
That's how I foresee, that's how I perceive, rather, that this has been working for some time now.
Right.
So, you know, it's sometimes, again, let's be vulnerable for a minute. Every now and again, I'm sure you must see someone, and you think, God, he's rubbish, but he's got 1,000 million times more hits or likes or fame or fortune than I have.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those people, that isn't because they're popular. It's because they've had traffic diverted to them for a certain agenda. And I'm sure of that now,
right,
because I've seen instances of it. I also met a man last year, won't say where, who whispered on the sidelines that that's a reality now. So he was the first person to not verify, but sort of corroborate it in a, you know, vaguely substantial way, to say people who have been co-opted don't know they've been co-opted, and that's the new trick.
So this makes me think of something I read in Julian Jaynes's thing about consciousness, bicameral mind.
Julian Jaynes, I've never heard anyone mention that. Yeah, the breakdown of the bicameral mind, yeah.
Yeah, and the first part of the book is particularly interesting, I think, because he talks about consciousness and conditioning and how we're conditioned when we're unconscious of what's happening. And he uses an example, various examples, but one that comes to mind is of a professor who's teaching in a class, and the students who are primed for this, they laugh when he's in a certain position in the room, and they give positive feedback, and they're able to actually use this method to manipulate his position in the room. Basically, he unconsciously picks up on the fact that when he's standing at a certain place in the room, the students are emanating love and humor, and they're really digging what he's doing, and so he ends up constantly going back into that position, right? So that sounds like what you're describing, is that if a person keeps getting hits for something, they will unconsciously recognize, maybe even consciously, this is what works, right? So this is
and then put more focus on it. It's like, let's say I did an event and 1,000 people came, and it was a great success, and many people said it was good. And on that event, you know, I unusually talked about German mysticism. I would think, holy shit, I might do that again. That was good. And somebody somewhere has made me do that, and I didn't notice.
Mm.
And I'm clever and perceptive, and I didn't notice. Now, someone who isn't clever and perceptive, because they're too busy to be so, which is another observation of mine, that busyness is the enemy of wisdom, right?
Mm.
If you have great fragmentation and discursiveness and busyness in your day, and you're hopping from one lily pad to the other all the time, you are easy to co-opt, you are easy to sequester, divert, and focus on whatever the pissing hell anyone tells you to do. You might be a great intellect, you might be a lovely man who thinks he's doing a decent job, but that describes, does it not, many of the people who host shows, who put broadcasts out there, who run alternative networks and TV stations. They fall into that category. It is easy to divert them. I'm sure if we did a little subversive experiment, we could I could say to you, right, let's pick a person, and over the year I will make that person talk about a certain subject more and more, and they won't even know it. I bet you I could do it.
Wouldn't we need numbers to do that, though?
Yeah, well, you can do that now, can't you? I can track certain kinds of hits from certain sorts of websites when I can put a cookie on that person's browser, which I could do. So we could track that.
Right.
So I think if me and you can do it, then people in bloody security and intelligence, it's easy to do it.
And so combined with this, of course, would be that when a person becomes more popular and gets more and more hits, then ego inflation kicks in, and then of course, and then they become exactly
blinkered, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's easy to do. So if you know you're being whisked around on aeroplanes and mm-hmm. having lovely lunches with people, you might not notice for a little bit. Even the best of us, we might not see that a little bit. And if you're not a smart, grounded, humble man, then you're fucking lost instantly. You've gone, and that's it. That's the end of it. So I have a realistic view that it happens. I know it does. I've seen it with my own eyes, and I've talked to people who are maybe involved with it. What I have come to the conclusion of is that the most successful co-opting is where the co-optee is unaware entirely of it. They don't know they're an asset.
Yeah, well, because they would have, first of all, obviously they wouldn't be able to give anything away because they wouldn't be privy to any information, but also they would have sincerity. They would be much more effective and convincing because if they believe it themselves.
Yeah, and you'd say, I can't believe it. And you have to be careful with it, because you can go back to, say, like Alan Watts, you know, the British philosopher. Mm. I mean, he was dead in 1973, so he was out of all this. But, like, people saying, oh, he was a CIA asset.
Yeah, I know. I've been hearing that because I used his voice on my first podcast.
And I'm like, well, maybe he is, but he's still fucking excellent.
Well, I tend to want to go by both. Like, okay, if somebody's not, there's something fishy around the background, okay, one thing. But also, if there's something fishy about what they're saying, if I've got those two together, then okay, then I will
good
start
marker,
to conclude something.
But, me too. Yeah. And they're like little triggers you can say, ha, hang on a second. So for me, one of my markers for it is if someone's just palpably rubbish and get like extraordinary, you know, kudos and acknowledgement, I just think, hang on a second. You're just obviously rubbish. Everybody knows you're rubbish. You're not really even trying very hard. Mm. That's a little flag that goes up. And if then they're talking about hot topics all the time, I'm thinking, oh, hang on a second. All right, so you've been assetized. You've been co-opticized or whatever. Mm-hmm. And off they go. And I think, yeah, well, you're still a man learning things on a journey. That's legitimate. But you may not be aware that your agenda has been I don't like the word hijacked, but diverted, you know, it's been diverted. For me, I think that when I see somebody who works on personal development in an honest way, that's quite hard to divert. But when you're just sharing information mm-hmm. and data, that's super easy to divert. So yeah. Maybe that people have attempted to do it for us, and sometimes it's worked for a bit and sometimes not, but it's kind of hard to do. Because you're asking people to be individuals, and, you know, I'm sometimes fond of using little axioms and inventing them. And one is, you know, individuality is the enemy of empire, really. And I encourage that. So the best thing they can do to me is just keep the numbers low. So maybe they're co-opting me by making me, you know, moderately successful.
There is no them, I guess, is the thing to...
No. Well, you could say that again if you super zoom out, yeah.
Yeah.
In the end, it's saying, look, unless you take responsibility for your own growth, the empire will come and fill up that vacuum. End of story.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, there's something to mirror something in us, but we are forever co-opting ourselves. I think is the
Yeah. So it doesn't bother me that, and I know that our mutual friend Alan Green, who's a lovely guy, had some concerns about red ice or whatever. Mm. I don't think that's necessarily anything to worry about, and I respect Alan. He's a really good lad. In fact, I was disappointed not to be able to join him at an event he was putting together in Olympia recently, but we can assume that what Alan says has some substance and his particular angle is legitimate. But I think the nature of the co-opting is different than how some of us might imagine it. And I think it's done with numbers,
yeah, well,
not with individuals.
He did say as much. I don't know if you listened to the whole thing.
I did listen to it. I didn't pick that out as much.
He was saying about how people who figure that calling aliens demons will sell the books a lot more. And so
that was a lovely point that he made. I did hear that. And he said, you know, if you talk about something that has a subgenre, off it goes. There's a pre-made ready market for it. And in Europe, you know, a lot of people are pissed off about immigration because it's destroying the fabric, not in ethnicity, but just in numbers. Forget their fucking colour. Just in numbers, it's really a problem in Britain. There's like bloody 70 million people now, can you believe? And it can't really support more than about 20.
Where's 70 million people?
In England, in the United Kingdom, rather.
Oh, well, it was 55 million just like 30 years ago, so that hasn't gone up that much.
Well, some people suggest, and these are like quite reliable figures from what I can gather, that the country can support properly 17 million people, and after that, it's overly reliant on imports and exports, and the infrastructure of things like the national health and the roads can't really do it. So they're always on the back foot. And when I went there in recent times, traveling around some places, I can tell it's different now. Mm. And it's kind of sad because some beautiful places that I used to know have gone now.
Right.
And that's because they had to build houses on it for people to bloody live in. So anyway, that's another story.
It is another story. Yes, I feel like we're just getting to the good stuff, actually.
Oh, we'll do it again, perhaps later in the year, Jason.
Because you know Castaneda, I mean, I've had to really take very seriously the idea that Castaneda was an operative, and I mean a real operative, a paid operative.
Jason, what are you talking about? You're crazy.
No, really. Well, there's a lot of I mean, I wouldn't say a lot of evidence, but there's enough evidence to really...
Oh, no. And even if he was, I mean, those books are still so vibrant.
Absolutely. Right? Well, not so what, though. Like it's
for me. So what? I don't think there's any chance of that. And even if it did, I just think, oh, well, whatever. He played a little, you know, like Ipcrest file Michael Caine game, fucking whatever. Maybe you needed to pay for your go-go dances.
No, he claimed to be an assassin. He himself claimed, like the book that he was writing when he died was apparently the confessions of when he was an assassin for intelligence.
I know, but that's so easy to fabricate, isn't it? We just totally don't know.
We totally don't know.
And if he was an assassin, that's like my second career choice, so that would be fine.
Well, it's funny, because you mentioned that with Henry, and I have to say, it was quite shocking. You were saying... you know, some people could be assassins and shoot people in the head, and that's a valid path, but it's not my path. I'm like, what? Did I just hear that? I actually had to replay it, because I'm like, wait a minute. It's not Carlos Castaneda all over again. Please don't say Neil's an assassin.
I would fucking love it, man. I would love to do that. I think that's brilliant. I would love to do that for a living. I really would. If somebody came to me today and said, forget all that shit about esotericism, you're an assassin now, I'd think, fantastic. Here's my bank account details. Let's go.
I'm not sure how to take this now.
Yeah, there's nothing off the plate, is there, really? You know what I mean? So it's a valid life expression. It's a detour. It's not a really good one, but it's valid, isn't it?
Well, no, I'm not going to agree. I mean, I think this the beyond good and evil is, again, it's great in theory, but in practice... I actually wrote a script about an assassin a few years ago.
See, there you go.
And it was, what I came up with was that he wanted to get out of the business, but he couldn't because they don't trust any assassins, assassins who want to quit because they think
you're
it's conscience,
dead.
So they kill them, right?
Absolutely.
But he was caught between a rock and a hard place because he couldn't live with what he was doing. He was haunted by the ghosts of those that he killed, right?
Yeah.
Literally, psychically. So he was totally fucked. Like, it was not a detour, but a dead end, really.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Describing it as a dead end, it is, and you have to make the long road back then over terrain you've already walked. That's the trick of the dead end. But yeah, I just kind of don't care about stuff like that. If they're a CIA asset, if they're an assassin, if they've been playing evil and killing people, whatever.
Well, yeah, we're at very different places in life then, because as hard as I'm struggling not to become moralistic in my middle age, I'm really very acutely conscious more and more of harm that people are doing, not knowingly or unknowingly, and of course not wanting to participate in that, hopefully that goes without saying, but not even wanting to invest in it or be complicit with it by, like, I don't even listen to mainstream music anymore. The Limitless podcast is all these small marginal people who no one's ever heard of. It's great music, but I don't want to be feeding into that machine.
Well, you're a gentle soul, if I may say, and I do mean that as a compliment. And thank goodness I'm not. And it's just a different way of looking at it. But we need both of those things. Do you know what I mean? It's like most people in my life are like you. But I'm not. You know, that's not my angle on it. And it's part of my expression, let's say, at the red end of the animal, to explore death and killing.
Yeah, well, that's definitely...
That's one for another show, Jason. I'm not fucking opening that up, though.
Nobody has ever suggested that I don't have a deep commitment to exploring the dark side of things.
Oh, no, Jason, you're one of an exemplar of that. You really are. Yeah. Not at all. No, I mean, your gentleness is in your bearing. It's in your assemblage point, right? It's just part of who you are. It doesn't mean gentleness in any sort of soft way at all, quite the reverse, but it's a gentleness and it's a great asset and skill. Mine is different to that. I have to cultivate gentleness. I have to try harder to have it in my life, and it's made my life better as I've brought it in, frankly.
Well, I have
if
to
you
do
want
that
to.
Too. I have to do that too. I've been a hard ass and a hard edge, a hard head, and a very hard person too, I think.
Yeah.
I have a more of a gentle persona, but yeah, deep down, I think we're probably made of a similar stock, actually.
Yeah, I guess so. It's that millimeter extra strength, that's all it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jason.
Yeah.
I knew this would be good, and that was really enjoyable, thank you.
You don't have to thank me at all. It's
Well, I'd like to.
Collaboration, so I have to thank you back, then.
Yeah, you do. No, it's just good to do it. Most people don't do this sort of stuff, so it's very novel, and people who've listened to my material will be like, gosh, that's different, when I link this up on my website whenever it comes out. So it's a novel thing, and hopefully some new people will come and discover your work and say, gosh, you know, this is a different approach. I like it.
Yeah, fuck Neil Kramer. I'm going to go to this guy.
Yeah, he's rubbish. Let's go to that guy who, like, is really doing it, yeah.
Sorry.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey said when his world come tumbling down. Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your prey. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey spoke when his word came tumbling down. Here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Now here comes the monkey. Here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. And this was all that monkey spoke when his word came
time, bang.